better than to schedule something like this on a Monday where things could go wrong, but we're glad we're all together now. Here at the Journal of Healthcare Contracting, we're really excited to have partnered with Orca Pacific and John G. Orso, who will be our expert today. We're really looking forward to gaining more insight. You know, suppliers working with Amazon is the top of everybody's mind, understanding what's going on with Amazon, how to increase their revenue, protect their brand, defend their bottom line while selling on Amazon. A recent study found that roughly 92% of shoppers who start their search for a product on Amazon end up purchasing that product there. I think it's really important that we help medical suppliers understand how to keep their brand resonating through Amazon and in front of your target customers. John G. Orso is the CEO of Orca Pacific. He's been doing this for over a decade, and I'd like to introduce him now. John, thank you for being on the call today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
I really appreciate you kind of bringing to our community the learning curve you've done in many other industries through Amazon Business the last decade or so. If we could, I'd love to just start with a quick slide on Orca Pacific so people understand where your expertise comes from, the experience you have, and what you guys are doing for other brands and other verticals.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give everybody the 60-second overview of our company. So Orca Pacific is a full-service agency with an exclusive focus on Amazon. Like you said, we've been doing this about a decade. We have clients in pretty much every major category, hard lines, soft lines, CPG, as well as industrial supplies, which is largely what we're going to be talking about today. We ultimately aim to curate expertise in every facet of the Amazon platform, so everything from the basics of item setup, account management, catalog management, up through content development and implementation, SEO, all of the marketing and merchandising elements of the platform, advertising support across paid search and display, operations support, direct import, chargebacks, demand planning, forecasting, et cetera, up through the higher level strategic elements of the platform, what we call platform strategy, i.e. vendor central or seller central or hybrid approach, pricing strategy, channel management, key negotiations, partnerships, relationships, et cetera. So at the end of the day, we want to make sure that our clients, through an extension of our work, are doing everything humanly possible to maximize the top line potential on the platform while protecting the bottom line and other strategic interests, things like channel management, et cetera. We currently have about 40 people on staff. All they do all day long is work on Amazon for our clients. We're here in Seattle. We're walking distance to Amazon's campus, and a good portion of our staff is made up of former Amazonians. The rest are outside industry veterans or various specialists in their fields.
That's interesting. You know, in our industry, it's very common to have agencies, if you will, or consulting firms advise, but not actually execute and provide content. It sounds like you're much more involved than we're used to seeing here in healthcare, where people are retained or organizations are retained almost as an advisory, but not truly an agent that's working on behalf of the brand. It sounds much more involved than what we're used to here in healthcare. If you would, I'd like you to just spend a minute or two, or as long as you need to, on understanding what is Amazon Business. I would believe our callers, personally, probably the vast majority of them are Amazon Prime members, but I would be real surprised if they've got a great depth of knowledge on understanding Amazon Business in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions, frankly, about what Amazon Business is and isn't. The best way to think of it is from a couple different angles. The first angle is Amazon's approach. So Amazon's approach to Amazon Business ultimately is to replicate what they've done with Amazon Retail for business customers and business products. They're certainly not there yet. They're doing about $10 billion a year through Amazon Business, so quite a bit smaller than Amazon Retail. but they're growing quite quickly, close to triple-digit year-over-year percentage growth. So Amazon Business, as it currently stands, from the perspective of a supplier, the best way to think of Amazon Business is essentially a different filter through which you look at the Amazon platform. So it's not fundamentally a different organization. It is essentially, right now, a different way of merchandising and selling selection on the Amazon platform. So the reality is the vast majority of products, with the exception of those that are actually legally restricted, like class 2 and 3 medical devices, the majority of products that are on Amazon Business are also on Amazon Retail and vice versa. So you can go on Amazon Retail and you can buy an industrial water pump. You can go on Amazon Business and you can buy a Barbie doll. So that's why when I say it's a different filter, the entire back end of the site, the technology, the distribution, the actual, the offices, the people are largely shared across the two sides of the organization, but it's what is displayed ultimately to the customer and then the features that are used that are different. That will be changing as Amazon Business continues to mature. It will break out more and more from Amazon Retail. But right now there's a few important differentiating factors. So first of all, to be an Amazon Business customer, you need a registered tax ID. So not anyone can go and just log in. You need to be an actual business that's operating. Of course, a lot of those are, small and medium-sized businesses, but more and more Amazon is going after the enterprise level businesses and procurement managers. So, and then beyond that, there are additional gates of registration, classification, et cetera, that open up additional selection that would be available to view and to purchase, things like medical devices. The other perks that one gets when using an Amazon Business account versus just going in and buying the same product through Amazon Retail, there's some additional shipping options. Amazon now has the ability to link into any of the major procurement software platforms. They also do have a sales force. The sales force is more catered around helping procurement managers integrate with the platform, not necessarily selling them on individual products. So they're really selling them on Amazon Business, not selling them on the products that are available on the platform. But you do have a much more sort of hands-on experience, especially for the larger enterprise level customers. But this is really, the best way to think of this is Amazon just getting started. So the reality is there's not a huge amount of difference between Amazon Business and Amazon Retail, but that is quickly changing. So as Amazon continues to put more and more resources into Amazon Business from an operations perspective, fulfillment perspective, technology perspective, this site, Amazon Retail and Amazon Business, will diverge more and more. And ultimately, the reason Amazon Business is diverging is because Amazon continues to build capabilities that allow it to compete more and more with those enterprise-level customers that obviously have much different needs than somebody buying a box of file folders for their home office, for example.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, a lot of our readership at the Journal Healthcare Contracting, I would say a good percentage of them are on have Amazon Business accounts, are using Amazon for some sort. And as it moves towards more medical supplies, if it does, and as it does, it's interesting to see that they could do trade accounts. Amazon can do trade accounts, so you don't have to have a credit card in there. As I understand it, they can also have formularies, so they can have a limited access to products. And the big differentiation, I think, to your exact point of the Amazon Business versus our traditional distributors is they're not selling products or even logistics services, but access to the platform and the community. And I think that's a big difference. The next slide, we have some key stats on Amazon Business that I think you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think these statistics are interesting, and I think largely they prove that Amazon Business is certainly resonating in the marketplace. I think the one stat that's important here that we may have left out is the growth rate. Amazon's goal in the next 3 years is to be at $50 billion in sales. They may not exactly hit that. It may be a bit delayed. And clearly, I've drank the Kool-Aid here a long time ago. But every year, Amazon has hit their target for Amazon Business over the last 5 years. They have literally been growing exponentially. So they've been doubling every year. That would mean, obviously, that they go from 10 to 20 billion next year and then 20 to 40. And they shouldn't be far off from that, which means that most of that volume will be incremental. So right now, the 10 billion is largely representative of share shift from Amazon retail to Amazon business. Things like people buying office supplies, other categories that have more crossover between retail and commercial. Transition from all of that. So now what you're seeing, and they actually did that at about 7 or 8 billion. So now what you're seeing in terms of this growth is truly incremental. Incrementality is largely coming from Amazon getting into the larger and larger customers, which is obviously hospitals, I think, is the big one in terms of this conversation, but all kinds of large private government businesses that are purchasing products. So Amazon Business is really going to take a very different position in the marketplace over the next several years. Online B2B right now, this 1.2 trillion number in terms of the forecasted size. So online B2B is actually twice as big as online B2C right now, which a lot of people, I think, don't realize. So Amazon sees this as a massive opportunity for them, a massive incremental opportunity, and they're putting a huge amount of resources into it. The last stat on here, obviously, very relevant to this audience, 50% of the country's 100 biggest hospitals are currently using Amazon Business. And again, the reality is they're probably not doing the majority of their procurement on Amazon Business. They're probably using it for, smaller purchases, kind of one-off things, staplers or some, medical supplies that they're needing to refill that are sort of outside of the scope of their normal procurement channel. But again, that will be changing in the coming years, where more and more enterprise level customers will be using Amazon Business as their go-to exclusive destination, not the sort of the one-off destination. If you think about it in terms of probably your own retail purchasing behavior, 10 years ago, maybe you did the majority of your purchasing at brick and mortar stores, and then you bought some kind of random weird stuff on Amazon, maybe a book now and then, maybe a movie that was hard to find, et cetera, where now for a lot of people, Amazon is their go-to place to purchase, and they will only go elsewhere as an exception to the rule. That's basically where Amazon Business is headed.
Great. John, we have a quick question from the audience, and it lends to the visibility Amazon shares. And I would ask, probably in more mature markets than medical supplies, do they ever share the mix? For example, do you think we'll see the day where Amazon might share how the healthcare sector is doing and medical supplies versus capital equipment? I don't know that you know that exact answer today, but have you seen other sectors where they would show you product mix or even category mix in a vertical that they're servicing?
So Amazon doesn't release their aggregated category information, but they will share the specific breakout for suppliers. I know that isn't the exact question, but for example, we have suppliers we know that have kind of a roughly a 50-50 retail to commercial breakout of their business market wide, and we're seeing like a 70-30 split on Amazon, 70 being retail, 30 being commercial. In terms of Amazon actually releasing their category data, yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. We have some tools internally that can help us do estimation, where we basically reverse engineer the Amazon algorithm and come out with a fairly strong directional estimate. And that's probably as good as it's going to get because Amazon keeps that very, very close to the vest. You know, they'll release like that $10 billion number, but typically never break it out more than that.
Yeah. And that direct to consumer, even if the consumer is a huge multi-hospital system relationship, is the value they believe they have, the ownership of that data and understanding that. That's a huge value proposition of theirs for wanting to do business through them. Let's jump into the five best practices for selling on Amazon Business. That's why everybody kind of logged on. We've understand a little bit more about Amazon Business and Orca Pacific. Let's jump into the top five, and we'll go into the first one, which you have as selection. Can you expand on that? What are the best practices around selection when doing business through Amazon?
Yeah, so simply put, the best practice here is to provide Amazon with your entire catalog. You know, exceptions would be exclusive product, restricted product in some cases, but that should really be the exception to the rule. The rule is anything that you produce that is available to ship in a domestic warehouse should be uploaded on the platform. So Amazon really thrives in a high selection environment. It's one of the core tenets of their business model. If people remember back, they say Earth's largest selection or world's biggest selection. They've stopped using that, but it's still a really critical piece of their model. Oftentimes, customers are going to Amazon because they know they can find something that they can't otherwise find. So typically, what Amazon calls a long tail or a more niche product will over-index on the platform because that tends to be a go-to source. Especially we found in commercial-oriented products where customers, at least for now, do have potentially a different go-to destination. Oftentimes they're going to Amazon to fill kind of around the periphery. So selection is really important. It's the foundation for everything else that you should be doing. And you know what I'm really advocating in general to a lot of the commercially focused brands and suppliers that we're talking to now is that they really dive into the Amazon platform, even though it's still somewhat early days. And if they're going to do that, they should do it with all of their product because there's a significant momentum factor at play with Amazon. So 3 to 5 years from now, when Amazon is a big player in these commercial categories, it will be a huge benefit for the companies that jumped in earlier with their entire catalog.
That's real interesting, John. I think that would be very counterintuitive to most of our listeners of medical supplies. I think they would want to carve a component of their portfolio out and trial that. But it sounds like your best practices and experiences load up everything you can ship that they could buy.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule. There's certainly situations that we've been in where it just, you know, doesn't make sense to upload every item. It may be just an issue with managing a really, really large catalog. You know, the catalog's 50,000 SKUs, maybe start with 10,000. The reality is, you know, there's in most cases, unless there's really a tangible downside for the supplier and our client in terms of doing that, it should be the rule to just get everything up there. And then, you know, at the end of the day, there is no gatekeeper. There's no buyer. So the customer is making the decision. So the more options they have, the more likely they are to decide to purchase your product.
That's fantastic advice. And, you know, I think the initial hesitation would be legacy distribution agreements they have in place. So suppose they have a promotion for a product with legacy distributors. They wouldn't want to feature those on Amazon because they've already got channel partners in place. But to your exact point, there is no buyer. It's the actual consumer, the end user, the organization, the health care organization using the product or applying the product. So that's a drastic differentiation. So let's move on to number two, if we could, and that is content. What are the best practices around content on the Amazon platform for commercial businesses?
Yeah, so Content is king on Amazon. You know, again, whether you're selling a commercial product or a retail product, the end customer is really reliant on content for the majority of their decision. You know, there is no salesperson. There's no one they can talk to directly about the product. They can't pick it up. They can't look at it. So the importance of content is really amplified. There are some best practices with content. You know, with commercial product, the key is really to make sure that all of the technical detail that the customer may need to make a decision is available. Even things like manuals, other, you know, PDFs that relate back to the product, anything and everything in terms of technical nature, as many photographs, especially, you know, if there are other graphics, technical diagrams, et cetera, that can be uploaded, those are all valuable. So basically our goal would be to take any existing content and technical specifications and get that up on the platform first and foremost. And then from there, we would want to build out more robust content. Amazon calls it A+ content or enhanced brand content. So this is where the product detail page will look more like a catalog page versus, you know, a more sort of limited just image and description of the item. So that can be important on more complex and really high priority products. There is an incremental cost potentially associated with that, so it needs to be used more deliberately. But that can also be really beneficial. And then in addition to that, there is an option now to upload something called an Amazon store. And this is a place to curate selection around your brand and your product specifically. So, you know, think basically a branded store within a store, so that when a customer's browsing your selection, they have more of a curated experience versus the standard Amazon experience, which is just the organic search page. So that can also be a helpful aspect.
Yeah, I think that materially changes too, just the information output from a supplier, where they truly have to have the technical specifications, requirements, and capabilities in context for the end user so they can make a full decision on that platform. I think a lot of that's being disseminated now through channel and personal selling, and I would think to a lesser extent back at the brand's website. And I think your point about an Amazon store being a curated experience is really powerful, because that's where the brand gets to keep its true texture and not necessarily cede it to Amazon. I think a lot of our listeners probably are very concerned when selling through Amazon, the essence of their brand is stripped, but an Amazon store can still allow that brand texture to live, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the last thing I'll say on this is, a lot of the customers, especially for the commercial product right now, are ultimately coming to Amazon first and foremost to do research on the product. So even if sales are relatively low compared to the rest of the channel, you know, even if the it's kind of early days with Amazon business, having a presence across your catalog on the platform to encourage research is really critical, not just to long-term success on Amazon, but in the marketplace overall. So 60% of all online product research starts on Amazon. 25% starts on Google as the number two. So Amazon is now the de facto product search engine, and it's really important to have all of that information uploaded on Amazon, accurate and available. Even if the customer doesn't purchase on Amazon, if they purchase somewhere else, Amazon is the largest and most active repository of product information in the world. And so embracing that as a foundational approach is, I think, really critical to any brand in today's environment.
Great. Thank you. Let's move on to the third best practice around advertising. You mentioned advertising. Take us through really how you help your brands advise them on how to advertise on Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. So Amazon has changed a lot in the last couple of years in terms of advertising and the importance of advertising on the platform. Up until maybe 3 years ago, Amazon was largely democratized, meaning big brands and small brands, niche brands, mass market brands could all sort of equally play and have an equal presence on the platform. And it really then was the customer interaction with the product that would drive that item up in relevancy rank. So the more it was looked at, the more it was purchased, the more it was positively reviewed, the higher it would be ranked, regardless of, whether you were, to use a retail example, Hershey's or, a startup candy brand. That's changed a lot in the last couple of years. So if you look at an average search results page, and this applies to Amazon Business equally to Amazon Retail. If you look at an average search results page, about 5 out of the 10 first product listings you're going to see are sponsored, meaning they're paid placements. The other half are, the traditional organic listing. So paid search advertising is becoming really, really critical to success on the platform. It's really a double-edged sword. The reality is there's actually much more upside and ability to sort of directly drive the sales of your own product on the platform. But the downside is that if you are not doing that and your competitors are, they're going to disproportionately win. So there's actually a much greater level of variance in terms of success on the platform today because of this new pay-to-play element. So advertising is really important. It's really fundamental to success on the platform. We do a lot in terms of advertising. We have internal technology we use. We have a great team, et cetera. I won't give anyone the hard sell here. But regardless of whether we're involved or not, advertising, especially paid search, it's called AMS in a lot of cases. That's actually an older term. It's also called sponsored brands. So that paid search element is really critical to the platform. Layered on top of that, you have paid display advertising. And this is also really interesting. It's actually newer. It's a newer product for Amazon, but it can be used with really significant effect because of the targeting capabilities. So Amazon has the ability now, and through select agencies, brands have the ability to target really specific behavioral groups on the Amazon platform. So we can target demographic, psychographic, search behavior. We can target down to the zip code and overlay all of those various fields on top of one another. So essentially, it's programmatic display advertising, and Amazon does not sell or share their first-party shopper data. So the only way you can access that customer data is to use an Amazon-owned advertising platform. So advertising is really critical overall. Frankly, could have a two-hour call just talking about this one specific lane because it does get quite technical and nuanced once you get into the detail. But I guess the headline is you basically, as a brand, if you want to maximize the platform, it's not a question of if you're doing advertising, it's a question of how much you're spending and then what you're doing with that budget.
Yeah, that's fascinating, John, because if you think about it, that's a whole new layer brands have to understand to add in for their products to get selected. They have to find ways to put content promotion out there so that the buyer goes on to Amazon to ask for their product, inquire about their product, and then they also need to budget and spend wisely so that their product's featured in either in that top 5 to 10 search or in a reasonable level so that the product's found. And I think
Yep.
I am sure our listenership will want to really learn that and understand that and do it wisely.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I will mention, which is actually really critical to this audience, is that right now, AMS, so paid search, is equally weighted on Amazon Business and Amazon Retail. So Amazon hasn't yet split that out. They are doing that later this year. So right now, you're targeting based on search, but your ads will show up equally on retail and business. Hopefully a couple months from now, they're in beta right now on this. So we're actively doing it with some of our clients, but it should be available to all brands in the next few months. you'll be able to break out specifically these strategies to Amazon Business. So you can just do paid search on Amazon Business, which is going to create a much, much better environment in terms of targeting advertising to ultimately the customers that you want to reach.
Yeah, that'll be real interesting because you can get real narrow on your target as opposed, you know, the proverbial fishing with a net as opposed to, you know, a more of a rifle approach on specific organizations and areas. So that'll be fascinating. So let's move on to number four, which I found the most fascinating when I reviewed the presentation because this never struck my target, but first mover advantage. So in a category, it's important to be on the platform early as opposed to follow the other brands you compete with there, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So this is really unique to Amazon. I mean, literally, I don't think that this phenomenon applies to any other brick and mortar retailer, distributor, or e-commerce player. And it's the idea, it's this term that gets thrown around a lot in the Amazon world called the flywheel. Essentially, what the flywheel concept is referring to is a virtual positive feedback loop. So the more something is done, the more positive results happen, which feed back into the first impact. So what I mean by that specifically is, for example, the more reviews you get on a product, the more likely someone is to purchase it. The more it's purchased, the higher it gets ranked in the relevancy ranking. The higher it's ranked, the more people see it. Therefore, the more people purchase it. Doing things like running advertising, improving content, all factor into this feedback loop. And there is a real long-term momentum at play on the Amazon platform, which leads to a significant first mover advantage. If you look back 10 years as Amazon was kind of getting serious in certain retail categories, there are brands that really paid attention early and took Amazon seriously early and invested, you know, relatively small amount of money, but at the time it was significant because it was all relative, that are still riding that wave today from that investment 10 years ago. It's not that you can't lose or have that position degraded over time, but there is a significant first mover advantage. So what's really interesting to me is that, you know, for the most part in most categories, there's no way to wind the clock back. You either took it seriously kind of back in the day or you didn't. The commercially focused categories are really the last big categories for Amazon, in my opinion, to be able to kind of utilize this first mover advantage because it is still relatively early days. The other thing that amplifies this is that Amazon will be breaking out the algorithm that ranks products between retail and business in the near future. So what that means is right now, to give an example of a product that has a lot of retail and commercial use, let's take paper shredders, for example, kind of random. But if you search paper shredder on Amazon right now, on Amazon retail, you see a lot of machines that are $30, $40, $50. Clearly, they're meant for home use. You don't see a lot of the $1,000, $2,000 big, you know, industrial level machines that you would buy for a big office. If you search on Amazon Business, you see the exact same results. In the future, you will see more product in search results that's weighted to commercial customers because Amazon will break the algorithm. They will separate it. So what will happen is that products that are resonating with the commercial customers will start to outrank those that are only resonating with retail customers, meaning that there's even a greater first mover advantage because as soon as Amazon breaks that algorithm out on Amazon Business, it's basically day one. And again, it's all relative. So if you can, you know, if you have let's say a $5 million business on Amazon, and that's relatively very small for you, but your competitors have a $2 million business and you're able to outgrow them to seven, when your respective businesses are, you know, 70 and 30 million, you will still be reaping that long-term momentum benefit on the platform for basically paying attention more than your competitors earlier. And yeah, so does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fascinating. I bet that's a, I would assume that's a notion that folks are not familiar with and need to really understand. So just to be clear, the flywheel concept is used currently both for business and retail, but will be broken out in the near future. So there's still dramatic functionality coming to Amazon to benefit, that can benefit suppliers, either in the advertising and the flywheel concept, if you will, the positive feedback loop that'll be more specific and absolutely more invigorated for the business platform. We do have a question about reviews. You touched a little bit on reviews, and I'm an adamant reviewer myself. I do it constantly. Do purchases on Amazon Business receive the same five-star rating and review capability that you see on the retail side?
Yeah, they do. So it's the same thing where it's mirrored. So again, this is kind of the different filter concept, but you're ultimately looking at the same content. This will also likely be split out at some point in the future, where you'll have business specific reviews and retail specific reviews. May just be for some product categories that they do that. But yeah, right now it's all equally shared across both sides of the platform.
Great, thank you. Let's go on to number five, because we do have a handful of questions already from the listeners that we can jump into after we go through number five. And number five, you have test and learn. Take us through that. What do you mean by test and learn?
Yeah, so this is just kind of a general concept, one that has served our clients very well. I get the question a lot, you know, if there's one kind of macro approach to Amazon from the perspective of a supplier, you know, what's a great kind of best practice? And I always say, you know, ultimately what differentiates, I think, our clients from those that do well and those that really blow it out of the water is this test and learn mentality. Amazon rolls out a huge amount of programs and new initiatives on a regular basis, monthly, yearly, et cetera. Not all of them, frankly, stay around. Some are beta tested and then abandoned, or they're changed, or, you know, two programs are rolled into one. But this first mover advantage is really plays a role across the platform. So just the idea that as a supplier, you'll be willing to try things, make small investments. If they pay off, you know, double down, make a larger investment and go from there. If they don't, say, you know, well, we tested it out, didn't work, let's move on to something else. That attitude generally, which I know especially for large organizations can be easier said than done. But if there's a way to really embrace that more sort of flexible, lean mentality, it really is going to serve you well as a supplier. Because those things that do work, because you tried them early and then you double down and you double down again, you can reap huge disproportionate gains on the platform while all of your competitors are sitting around debating whether it's something they want to do or not, and you're just doing it and you know, doubling down. There's a big competitive advantage. And you know, unlike a lot of organizations that may have a new program every 5 years, they roll out a lot of fanfare, Amazon is constantly rolling out these small little initiatives, things like transparency, brand registry, even AMS, which we've talked a lot about. 3 or 4 years ago, nobody was using. It was launched and, you know, CPC rates were 5 cents because it was on a bid basis and no one was bidding on it. So you could just essentially buy massive quantities of advertising inventory for pennies. And, you know, we had clients that tripled their business in a year because of that, because they were willing to try this new weird concept that no one had heard of before. So just generally, I think that's a great attitude to have with Amazon. So sort of test early, test small, double down if it works, move on if it doesn't.
Great. Thank you. Sage advice. I'm going to jump into some of these questions, and they're a little bit all over the place. Share what you will with your experience from others. What is the commission seller fee for B2B sales? Is there a flat fee, or is it what you negotiate? Are there different scales? How does the commission work for Amazon?
Yeah, so on the Seller Central side of things, the way Amazon largely makes money is they charge a commission that's based off the retail price of the product. Because you're essentially selling direct to consumer, you're selling at retail, Amazon takes a commission. That commission is between 8% and 15%. It is not negotiable. And the reason that I list a variance there is it varies by subcategory, but for a given subcategory, it's locked in. It is what it is, and it's equally applicable to any entity selling product in that category.
So that's good to know. Then we feel comfortable telling our folks when their category has a commission assigned to it, all those that partake in that category are paying the same fee, same percentage fee.
Yep. That's right. Now on the vendor central side of things, which is, you know, more of a wholesale retail relationship, there are program terms there, and those are highly negotiable. So they're different for everybody. They vary quite a bit. It's based, you know, on your cost structure and other things, and Amazon renegotiates them every year on a one-off basis. So that's a very different dynamic in terms of sort of the cost of doing business. But yeah, on the Seller Central side of things, it's all just, you know, it's locked in across the board.
And the differentiation there, the Seller Centric, is where they house the product, warehouse it, ship it, and bill for it, and do everything for it, as opposed to it being fulfilled from the vendor's location or warehouse.
So Seller Central is essentially direct to consumer. So Seller Central means you as a supplier are selling the product direct to the end user. You can also do something called FBA or Fulfilled by Amazon, which means that Amazon is doing the fulfillment, the forward and reverse logistics, as well as the customer service, but it's ultimately still being technically sold by the supplier. Vendor Central is the wholesale retail relationship where you as a supplier are selling product to Amazon. They own it, they're warehousing it, and then they're selling it out after the fact to their end user, to their customer.
Okay, great. Thank you. What advice do you give to brands around controlling their product data? And I'm not sure, I think they might be talking about pricing, but I'm not sure. Are there any best practices that a supplier that's engaging Amazon need to know about just kind of controlling their message, their information? You know, I know they're not getting the sales tracings to the individual healthcare organization level, but I think folks are real worried about opening the kimono for their competitors and others to see and their non-contracted customers.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and I'm going to try to answer it, but I don't know if I totally understand it. But I think, you know, in terms of product information, so, you know, product details, product specifications, I would assume that anything you're sharing is to ultimately with the intent that it's shared with the customer specifically. So, you know, if there's anything that should be restricted, my advice would be don't share it at all. And you know, it's possible there's more nuance because of the category here that I'm missing. But that would, you know, generally be my advice. In terms of other information that Amazon asks for, there are some things I can think of that Amazon would need, you know, specific, you know, testing information, et cetera. Any of that, I mean, there's, I would put it into two buckets. There's the information that is clearly meant to be shared with the end customer. Assume that's wide open if you share that. And then there's the information that Amazon needs to do some internal due diligence, and that is completely locked down. There is no overlap. You know, without knowing more detail, I won't get into kind of specifics there, but that's probably the way I would address that question. I'm not sure if I may be off base.
Yeah, it wasn't a complete question. I just thought I'd ask you to address sort of the protection of data and information. And again, I would come back to, I think that's what Amazon would purport their value is and why they get a commission and a percentage. It's not just for shipping you know, shipping products to these customers. It's the data they collect on the customers. The proverbial example of knowing which customers are buying peanut butter but not jelly, so we can go and offer them jelly. I know that's a very simplistic view, but them having that data, they can go to the jelly suppliers and say, hey, why don't we do a promotion to this type of customer around your jelly? And maybe they'll quit going to Costco or Walmart for that jelly. And that data is, I think, what Amazon's so powerful at creating, profiling, and getting handsome rewards for having.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about their advertising business, it's on track to be a $10 billion business. It's completely incremental to their retail business. And this only works because of the customer data they have. So, yeah, they're going to monetize that to great effect. And that's only going to accelerate over the coming years.
We've got two questions from the audience, John, and I'm actually going to field them because we've done a lot of work and study around Amazon. And it has to do with what is their stance on GPOs? And in the future, will they work with group purchasing organizations? Will they be on contract with them? And I'm gonna respond in maybe a little bit of a neutral position on that and say, I don't know, but I'll tell you what my tea leaves show me. I think time and time again, the professional buyer, the procurement buyers, the economic buyers in our nation's hospitals and health systems that we have seen the last decade aggregate everything they can and standardize everything they can are probably Amazon Prime members at home. And I see as these buyers and these leaders change for a number of reasons, either because of just the generational aging of folks, that the way people are going to want to buy professionally, I think, are going to more mirror how they're buying personally, not the opposite. I don't think they're going to want to go home and order their hair care products and their consumer electronics and their books like they are supplying a nurse's station on the seventh floor of Eastside Hospital. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be more like, why can't we get product to the nursing floor as gracefully as I can get my hair care product the next day? And I would think the GPOs, as they have reinvented themselves, are going to find a way to stay in that conversation. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know how it'll look like. And I don't know that Amazon is as forthcoming as we would like them to be, because I don't know what the upside is for them to do that. But I have, data showing me, two decades at least of information showing GPOs width of contracting continues to widen. The contracted throughput continues to increase. The relationship they have with hospital and health systems is literally in many times an ownership position, meaning the health systems own the GPO, if not figuratively own that relationship, because there is a financial relationship for patronizing them. And I don't see that going away. The minute I see data going away that is the case, I would certainly let everyone know. And I might be dead wrong on all of this, but those are the kind of things I'm seeing and believing are going to happen with the GPO-Amazon relationship. The other question is, do we know how many sellers are participating in Amazon Healthcare today? I'd be real surprised, again, if they publish that, as they do like to keep a lot of their information confidential. And sometimes, frankly, John, I'm surprised when I see them release information like $10 billion, but they probably like to do some of that stuff so that the financial markets continue to covet their relationship and believe in their future and projections and that type of stuff. But would you guess that they've released how many suppliers are on that platform in the healthcare Amazon business platform?
No. I don't think they ever will. I mean, the reality is the 10 billion number is PR, right? Like that's the reason they release it is so they get more suppliers on board. So, you know, we do things like have calls like this. And also so they get more customers on board and say, oh, wow, well, you know, if Amazon's doing $10 billion, this must be a serious place to go and find these products. So, yeah, it's really PR for them. I mean, we get, you know, a decent view in terms of just, you know, anecdotal conversations in terms of different numbers. But, yeah, otherwise, if if they're releasing data, there's a very deliberate reason why. So,
all right, I'm going to start to wrap today's call, and I think we're going to go just a couple minutes long. We started a couple minutes late. John, you know, looking into your crystal ball, do you see a day where Amazon would have an offering specifically for one customer? Said another way, would you ever see Amazon put together an organization, a hub, a distribution center in Atlanta just to supply the largest health system in Atlanta with medical devices, maybe knees or hips or stents or an implantable or something? Or are we always going to see Amazon morph the platform to be enticing to the whole healthcare organization? Would they ever go to that into that particular of a customized solution? And I won't hold you to it. I promise I won't publish this in 5 years and say how we are wrong. But I think that lays heavily on a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. So, you know, Amazon is constantly reinventing themselves. So I would never count anything out. I absolutely think you're going to see more single buyer specific, I would say experiences, whether that's literally like a physical fulfillment center or not, I think is probably more debatable. But, you know, arguably, so Amazon already does have the ability to display contract pricing, so specific pricing for a customer. So arguably, they already have that capability on Amazon Business, but I think it's going to get more and more robust over time. So, I mean, I think from an actual like user experience digital perspective, yeah, absolutely. You're going to have something that looks and feels very customized to a specific buyer. In terms of the actual fulfillment of the product itself, you know, Amazon will do that if they need to, but they may not need to. I mean, they have 100 million square feet of distribution space in the U.S. You know, in a couple of years, it'll probably be doubled. So, you know, can they get that product to a customer without having, like, literally a specific space devoted to it? You know, it could be maybe a portion of a fulfillment center in the same urban area as that customer's located. So I think, you know, they're going to do what they need to do. They are, as many people know, they're customer obsessed. And if the customer's big enough, then they're going to do what they need to do to keep them happy. But yeah, I think the customization aspect in general is going to be something that we're going to see more and more of as they get more into the enterprise level customers.
Fantastic. John Giorso, thank you so kindly for your time today. It was a fascinating conversation. We have a slide up now on the webinar, how you can contact Orca Pacific, your partner for selling on Amazon. A couple of other things I just want to tell you folks, if you have any questions, please feel free to email me. I'm happy to answer any other questions or talk more about this. I spent a lot of time thinking about Amazon and what it means to our specific space. My email address is jpritchard, and there's a T in Pritchard, at sharemovingmedia.com, or find me on LinkedIn. Be happy to have a conversation. Happy to field any questions you might have or ones that didn't get answered. I'd also like to let you know about a couple upcoming events we have. We have a webinar March 11th. It's free. And it's called 6 Essential Rules of Negotiating with $1 Billion or Larger Organizations. So please sign up for that. You can see all of these events at jhconline.com, where you registered for this event. And that's JHC as in Journal of Healthcare Contracting. So jhconline.com under events and webinars. And the other, I'd ask you to mark your calendar for Thursday and Friday, November 14th and 15th, where John will actually be keynoting a session about Amazon for the National Accounts Summit here in Atlanta, Georgia. This is the second year. We had great attendance last year. It was a great event. I hope to see you all there. And with that, I greatly appreciate everybody attending today's call and wish you all the luck in the world with Amazon and all your other trade partners. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, John. Thank you.